This is America's Roundtable from Washington, D.C., an initiative of the U.S.-based think tank International Leaders Summit in partnership with Lancer Broadcasting Corporation and Supertalk Mississippi Media. Thank you for joining us on America's Roundtable. I'm Joel Adensami, your co-host, joined by economist Natasha Serdorch, co-founder of International Leaders Summit and the Jerusalem Leaders Summit.
America's Roundtable guests include leading voices from business, government, media, energy, technology, healthcare, and the broad policy arena. Subscribe to America's Roundtable on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. Visit America's Roundtable at americasrt.com. We invite donors and advertisers to reach us by visiting our website, americasrt.com. Welcome to America's Roundtable.
It's Saturday morning, and this weekend on America's Roundtable from Washington, D.C., Natasha Serdorch and I are delighted to welcome a distinguished guest, one of America's top economists and former U.S. Congressman Dave Brett, who represented Virginia's 7th District and now serves as VP for Business Engagement at Liberty University. We're also honored that he serves on the Advisory Board of International Leaders Summit. And without any further delay, welcome Congressman Dave Brett. Great to have you back on America's Roundtable.
Good morning, Dave.
Hey, always great to be with both of you. Outstanding.
Thank you so much, Dave. Dave, we have talked on a program about the vanishing American dream in the minds of many Americans.
Yeah.
And you recently shared your concerns about the wealth distribution in America, looking at various charts covering different periods of time since 1980s.
Yep.
And the story that these charts show is that today the top 10% richest own more than the bottom 90% combined.
Right.
Could you kindly share with us the trends, the reasons for the decline of the middle class, and how do we reverse these trends?
Yeah, so we had an explosion of inequality at, 1929, the Roaring Twenties, et cetera, and then the Great Depression corrected it, and we came back to normalcy. And then even after World War II, from World War II, 50s, 60s, 70s, the distribution of income wasn't that out of kilter. But then 80s and 90s, you start seeing the data show a clear separation. The rich are starting to take off. That's all kind of the rise of technology, right, in the background going on there. But it's also the growth of government and then the growth of kind of what you call the super winners. So today, the super winners are the Magnificent Seven, these firms. You can go Google them, right? But it's all the Microsofts and Apples and Facebooks and Tesla, et cetera, Amazon. And these seven firms are worth more market cap than all of Europe combined, right? And so, as you said, the major stat is, the top 10% own 90% of the stocks and the bonds and the pension funds, et cetera. And the super rich own a huge portion of that. And so, if you're just doing economics, those things tend to fade after 20 or 30 years, right? All the old monopolies are gone from 30 years ago. They've been replaced by these new seven. But the real worrying thing now is these seven are aligned with the defense complex, the State Department, Department of Homeland Security. Google was started with a DOD grant, right? So that now there's too much, too many crony relationships. This is a result. Mike Benz has been out with Tucker doing interviews. And DHS was given the legal authority to spy on the American people. Mm. So that's the problem. It's the wealth inequality is bad enough by itself, but now they're shaping the politics, they're shaping the ideology, they're shaping what kids think. And so that's the real worrying part of this. And like you said at the beginning, now the tech, right, artificial intelligence piece, that also is not being shared broadly. That hasn't even seeped down below one fifth. Brookings has a paper out on this. And the tech spillovers advantages accrue to only the top 20% of the rich firms. So they don't seep down to the middle class firms, small, medium firms. They don't even seep down to the Fortune 500 all the way. And so that is going to be another spike in income inequality as it displaces workers. And all of this fits within the context of trade, right? This wouldn't be as heightened a problem if you didn't export all your jobs, you know, to China and now all over the world. And I'm pro trade. I'm a free trader. But when you're dealing with China and they're not reciprocal and they don't follow the golden rule and they don't allow us to, you know, be in their universities and in their Hollywood making movies there and sharing our ideas, then it's not working right now. We got to get some basic common sense back.
Right. And how do we actually make small businesses and, you know, freelancers and other entrepreneurs get more involved in tech industry? I mean, how do you see, because if we continue with this trend, there will be greater disparity because the 90% of the wealth is owned by the richest, right?
Right.
So how do we reverse these trends?
Yeah, well, my view is you need free market economics. Right. And that's counterintuitive right now, because I want there to be free markets, but it's kind of like wanting a unicorn. They don't exist anymore. Right. So all those firms I just mentioned, they're all monopolies and they have monopoly power, and it's been granted to them by the government. So what you got to break them up. There's no way around it. Right. So a supply curve in economics, the assumption is there's a lot of firms on that supply curve competing to provide a great good or service. And that competition leads to continuous improvement in that product and service. And the world, we're great at a lot of stuff, right? This country's got a lot of great stuff. But now it's all being run by these seven monopoly type industries that all have government tentacles. You know, Tesla, their major plant is in China worth a couple billion dollars. And then and their CEO, Elon, uses that capital base as a base from which to launch other businesses, using that as his leverage. Well, so it's just, you know, the average guy can't do this.
Right.
And so I don't like it. It's un-American in the truest sense, where you give everyone a shot at competing. And we're not doing that anymore.
Right, right. Dave, in the Wall Street Journal article published this past week titled, "One says 2.4%, another says 3.1%, which inflation metric is right?" The article compares two measures of inflation.
Yeah.
One issued by the Labor Department, which actually measures Consumer Price Index, or CPI, which is based on surveys, how much of the spending consumers say they devote to different items, versus Commerce Department measure PCE, which is based on actual, you know, spending and incomes. So both of them are measuring core, in this case, we're measuring core prices without excluding food and energy items.
Yeah.
However, according to new calculations from Moody's Analytics, the typical U.S. household needed to pay $211 more a month in December to purchase the same goods and services it did 1 year ago.
Yeah.
And when compared with January 2021, shortly before the inflation crisis began, prices are up by 17.6%.
Right.
Dave, when prices of various items go up, they rarely come down.
Right.
And we can observe that on grocery items. And there was an interesting statement just published via Fox News giving an example of a company, Mondelez International, which produces Oreos and Ritz crackers, among others.
Yep.
And this report stated they have seen their profit margins increase by about 75% over the past year as the prices come down. Mm-hmm. But sticker prices for consumers stay up.
Mm. Yeah.
So, Dave, what are your thoughts about this decline in our purchasing power?
Yeah.
And how do we pass these savings from companies to consumers in the end?
Yeah, well, we had a bout of inflation because the Federal Reserve printed too much money. There's your problem. Right. So they're out of control. We never should have let them do that. We had the interest rate at 0% for a decade. There's no economics that teaches that should be the case. But these power guys up at the top there, that played a large part in propping up the rich again. Right. Back to that story. Right. Having 0% interest rates doesn't help senior citizens, you know, saving for retirement. But it's great if you're investing in capital, et cetera. But the main thing you hit on, you know, whether it's 3% or 3.5% or whatever, we'll sort that out. But that you hit the main point, and it's the loss of purchasing power, right? So people are not fully aware of what that means yet, because it's never reported on the mainstream news. But you also brought up the point that prices have never gone down. So let's just simplify, right? So in the last 4 years, we've lost 20% of purchasing power. That's widely agreed on. So let's just make it real simple and say we had inflation of 10 and then 5 and then 5. Well, that's great news, right? Because inflation's down. No, right? And so this is the part that they fool you with, right? Inflation was 10%. That means prices went up by 10%. Then inflation went down to 5, but that means prices are still going up by 5. And then prices went up by 5 again. So prices went up by 10, then up by 5, then up by 5. And so not only does it affect your consumer market basket when you go grocery shopping, which is the shocker to people, right? And gasoline and all that.
Right.
But the real shocker, they don't even know yet. The real shocker is all their retirement funds are worth 20% less, right? If you go pull out money from your retirement fund right now, every dollar you have to spend buys 80 cents. Like you said, it buys what 80 cents used to get you. That's the real loss. So if you got a, you know, say you're wealthy and you got $1 million in retirement, it's only going to buy $800,000 worth of stuff.
Right.
That is the shocker.
Yeah.
The American people don't get it yet because they're not doing that. Right. And so that loss in purchasing power. And then the Fed, of course, wants to run inflation if they can, because now our interest payments on the debt are $1 trillion. And so the only way they can get out of this, we're going to be $50 trillion in debt, according to CBO, in 9 years. Mm. $50 trillion in debt. The interest payments at 5% will be $2.5 trillion in just interest payments in 9 years, right? And this is conservative. That's without any wars.
Right.
So I'm not even hyping it up.
Right.
So those are the facts. The only way you can pay that off is if the Fed deflates. Right. So they get to pay off that debt with cheaper dollars.
Mm.
And that's they're going to try to do that. They're going to all the political views are just my own, but they're going to first try to get Biden reelected or a Democrat reelected, you know, by they got to solve inflation right now in the short run. But then my guess is they go right back up to at least 3, 4, 5%. And try to run that continually.
Right. Yep. We're paying $2 billion a day of interest at this moment.
Yeah, right. Right.
And Congressman Brad, I recall our journey to Israel when we walked on Israeli soil in Judea and Samaria. And, that was the kingdom of Israel's yep. first capital some 400 years ago. But today in that very region,
yep.
we have Israelis that are being attacked by Palestinian terrorists. So instead of targeting the Palestinian yep. terrorists, the Biden administration, through Biden, actually pushed forward a executive order targeting Jewish settlers. So if they attack, for example, Palestinian terrorists,
yeah.
they could find themselves in a trouble by being censured or being held to account by American laws.
Yeah.
So here we are. America is now targeting Israeli settlers, and Israel is a rule of law country. They actually
right.
prosecute criminal activities. So
yeah.
as we look at this, and our Jewish American friends are very concerned about it,
yeah.
shouldn't Congress actually repeal this dangerous EO executive order that is targeting Israeli settlers? And, you know, we have open borders here. And no one's doing anything about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's stunning. What you say is true. And, Biden's walking a tightrope there for just political reasons.
Right.
The Michigan primary was yesterday or 2 days ago or whatever. Right. And the squad are pro-Palestinian and they threaten to keep the Palestinian Arab Muslim vote from going for the Democrats. Well, that's a big block in Michigan, and that could turn the tide.
Exactly.
Right. So Biden's kind of favoring them on one hand, but he knows the pro-Israel forces are much bigger, and the American Jewish community is very powerful. And so he doesn't know what to do, right? And it'd be good if we just did the right thing. And, you know, my counsel always to Israel when I was in Congress is, you know, we have a special relationship, but it's not because you're a aircraft carrier in the Middle East. It's because of your God, the God of Abraham, right? And the key there is the best thing Israel can do is more God talk. They don't. I used to ask, you know, can we get into theological dialogue? And it was a little quiet, you know, and people are sensitive on all that. But for crying out loud, I mean, if you're Israel, that's the conversation that Americans want to have, right? We want to be in a relationship and do theology and talk about Israel, the land and the history and the rich relationships we've always had together. And so, I, in this country, I give the same sermon to this country regularly, right? We got to get back to God. And, if you turn your back on God, God will let you, and then you're going to suffer the consequences. And to me, it looks like we're suffering the consequences in this country greatly right now, right? Mm.
You've said it so well. It's our Judeo-Christian principles that made this country great.
Right. Right.
And the American exceptionalism is waning because we're moving away from it. We're deriding that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a guy, Tim Alberta, that writes in The Atlantic and Politico, and he's the son of an evangelical minister. And he says Christians shouldn't be involved in politics.
Right.
And specifically these evangelical people. Right. And he's an evangelical in politics for the last 20 years writing for Politico. Right? So, I mean, you really just can't make it up. And his books come out right before Trump's going to get elected every time. And he's a Christian evangelical punching at Christian evangelicals. And so the world is upside down right now. And, you know, so I didn't call names or anything, but I said I was on a popular show. And again, all political views are just my own. But I said, Tim, you may want to review the history of the power of the Judeo-Christian tradition, aside from the wisdom and the rabbinic tradition on its own. Right. But you may recall that the evangelicals, you know, founded Harvard and Yale and Princeton. And then you may recall that we created modern democracy. The Greeks beat us to it in ancient days, but it faded. And we were the torch that carried on democracy, which he thinks the evangelicals are assaulting. And then we improved on democracy, and we have this thing called a republic with a separation of powers. So that comes out of James Madison and the Christian tradition, the separation of powers based on a very fallen view of human nature. And then if you need a little icing on the cake, only in Judeo-Christian lands do you have the human rights dialogue and language originate. And now they're calling the folks who say that our rights come from God Christian nationalists. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. Are you crazy? Are you familiar with Thomas Jefferson? Right. And so, you know, they're going to lose that fight. That's they're not being too intelligent there. But the Christians have been sheep. They've been way too quiet. We've been stupid at times. We gave our universities to the secular realm voluntarily on a goodwill effort. And now they've been taken over by Marxists, and the Christians look stupid. Mm-hmm. And so, hello, you know, wake up, church. It's time to rock and roll. Let's go.
Right. Because if they're in their own opinion, if they our rights don't come from God, they would want us to think they come from government.
Yes.
Which means they can be taken away anytime from us.
Yes.
Like they've been taken in communist countries.
Yes.
Property rights and religious freedom and any freedom and liberty. So we can't be duped into thinking that our rights are coming from government.
Right. And I mean, it's just shocking. But our Jewish community, you don't want to bring up the Hitler word, but that's the classic case, right? He won a democratic election, which was evil, right? But the great protector in this country is that we have a republic that guarantees minority rights in the Constitution and law. We protect minority rights because we believe every person is made in the image of God. And so, yeah, it's all of that fits together real nicely, and it's worked real nicely. And so, yeah, the left is trying to parse this, what they really mean, right? If you watch that Ben's interview on democracy, or Tucker's been on this and whatever, the term democracy, the way the left's using it, means that you agree with the democratic institutions that we control, the State Department, the DOD, the CIA, the FBI. These are the Democrat institutions that we control. And if you speak out against our view of the way these Democratic institutions are operating, then you're not Democratic, which is just, absurd.
Right. Dave, a young woman in Georgia was brutally murdered by an illegal immigrant this past week. He was a repeated offender. He was already in the country. According to the Gallup poll, while many Americans regard the economy generally and inflation specifically as the most important problem facing the U.S., far more in the most recent poll named immigration. So the latest results are based on a February 20 Gallup survey where immigration is ranked ahead of all other issues as the most important problem at this stage.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts? I mean, you know, thinking about you know, securing the border, deporting the illegal immigrants, it should be done. I mean, why is this such a big problem at this stage?
Yeah. Well, because the Senate, you know, produced the most ridiculous immigration bill ever. It didn't have detain or deport. And then it said, after you get over 5,000 per day, we're going to shut down the border. Well, the logic there is kind of funny. Okay, after you hit 5,000 illegals per day, you're going to shut down the border, which implies you can shut down the border, right? They agree, right? So if you can shut down the border, why don't you shut down the border, right? And so, again, we're back into these word games. The left has trapped us into just not being confident. It's illegal. It's illegal immigration. Sorry, you know, but we're a country of laws. And the longer we go down this, you know, this kind of 1984 Orwellian language rabbit hole, the worse off we become. We've lost our confidence. If you don't have a nation of laws, and then there's a two-tiered system of justice in the Justice Department, right, that's just very clear across political parties. The Republicans are scared stiff to say anything because you will get censored, right? You got Catholic nuns being censored and shut down. You got conservative news media sites being shut down. I think it was 2 million Facebook hits were shut down if they mentioned either prohibited language related to the COVID virus or elections. In a free country protected by the First Amendment. I mean, this is shocking, folks.
Right.
And if you just think that we're going to somehow ease out of this because it's America and we're great, you're wrong. The left is in full control. And until the church wakes up or Christians wake up or just good people get a backbone, we're in deep trouble.
Yeah. In this final moments here, Congressman Dave Brett, we've appreciated your leadership on Capitol Hill. And now you're at Liberty University, empowering, training, equipping a new generation. Yeah. Could you share with us what you are doing at Liberty University and how this institution is that hope and others similar to it are training and empowering a new generation to do great things for this nation?
Yes. Well, you know, it's not even that exotic or exciting. Harvard's motto in 1640 was truth for Christ and church. Liberty University still believes in truth for Christ and church. Harvard, I hate to tell you, it's strike three, truth, Christ, church, right? So that's what we do at Liberty all day. The kids, I was just in the gym working out, trying to get my hairdo pretty for you guys and the, you know, whip on video as well. But all the kids are over there, the staff that are working, they're reading their Bibles, they're doing their morning devotionals. They're aggressive. What are you reading? And I'm reading Ecclesiastes or Mark or whatever. I mean, they all start their day. They all have a servant attitude and heart. They're just kind. I haven't heard one vicious remark of a student on a student since I've been here for 5 years. None of it, right? So it's just a total difference when you're surrounded by Christian young people, and they're just great.
Absolutely, and you're so right about it. With what we're seeing at Harvard University compared to Liberty University, at Harvard, there's protest against Israel. At Liberty University, you pray for Israel. So truly, what a difference indeed. 100%. Thank you so much for your leadership and what you're doing. Congressman Dave Brett at Liberty University, former Congressman Dave Brett, VP for Business Engagement at Liberty University. Thank you very much indeed, Brother Dave.
Thank you so much, Dave.
You bet. God bless you, Joel. God bless you, Natasha. Thank you. Keep doing what you do. You're a great power couple. You're always civil, decent, and truthful. Keep it up.
Thank you so much,
terrific,
Dave.
This is America's Roundtable from Washington, D.C., an initiative of the U.S.-based think tank International Leaders Summit in partnership with Lancer Broadcasting Corporation and Supertalk Mississippi Media. Thank you for joining us on America's Roundtable. I'm Joel Adansami, your co-host, joined by economist Natasha Sardorch, co-founder of International Leaders Summit and the Jerusalem Leaders Summit.
America's Roundtable guests include leading voices from business, government, media, energy, technology, healthcare, and the broad policy arena. Subscribe to America's Roundtable on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. Visit America's Roundtable at americasrt.com. americasrt.com. Follow us on Facebook, America's Roundtable, and Twitter at America's RT. We invite donors and advertisers to reach us by visiting our website, americasrt.com.